Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel for this morning. It is Monday, the 11th of August, and a pleasure to have you with us. I don't know if you noticed, but it was an absolutely gorgeous weekend.
Really?
Yes. It was as if we ordered it. It was beautiful and perfect.
And a full moon, almost.
And a full moon. And
yesterday it was.
And hopefully everyone enjoyed it as much as you possibly could, because it was just perfect summer weather. So here we are in another beautiful summer day. So we welcome you and are very happy that you're joining us. You can participate in the conversation. We do hope you do that. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. First of all, let me just tell you that everyone is on vacation. Alan is away. Ray is away. Libby is away. Rosemary is away. So we have our best and our brightest here, and we thank you very much. These are the people who are with us and for some reason don't go on vacation.
And who are sitting outside at the bus stop outside and were impressed into duty.
And your name again is?
Time Junyuan Associate Editor Mike Spain, who will, as I'm calling him my co-host for the next 3 weeks here. So Mike Spain is with us, and tech attorney Rich Honan joining us once again from Philips Lighthouse. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
It's very nice to have you with us, and we'll get to the news, which some big stories and some, really scary stories going on in the world, and we'll talk about as many of them as we can in the time that we have allotted. Again, we welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. So the President of the United States announces on Friday night that there is going to be airstrikes and a possibility of airstrikes, and then the airstrikes begin, and then there's some movement on those airstrikes, and then I guess it was Thursday night, right? He announced it Thursday night, and then on Saturday he said that there had been some progress, although he refused to put a timeline on it and said that this could be weeks or months rather than days, and did not commit to any particular time period, and then went on vacation. So we can talk about that.
Mike's already taking umbrage at your delineation there.
Well, I mean, that is
what took a lot of people with him, like the all his foreign policy advisors, et cetera.
Right. Okay, and then they all went golfing.
Well, that's where a lot of conversation happens, Joe. A lot of decisions are made out on the greens.
Now, before everyone starts writing me letters about all of the former presidents who have taken vacation during times, we'll get to this as a complete topic in a moment. But that is what happened. So I just want to state that. Okay, so let's get into the actual story about the airstrikes. Capitalizing on U.S. bombing, Kurds retake Iraqi towns. With American strikes beginning to show clear effects on the battlefield, Kurdish forces counterattack Sunni militants in northern Iraq on Sunday, regaining control of two strategic towns with aid from the air. The American airstrikes carried out by drones and fighter jets were intended to support the Kurdish forces fighting to defend Erbil, the capital of the Iraqi Kurdistan region, according to a statement by the U.S. Central Command. They destroyed three military vehicles being used by the militant group. And the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and damaged others, the statement said, adding that the warplanes also destroyed a mortar position. So, again, a clear effect that we have, our airstrikes, the U.S. bombing is having, but that issue of timing, how long are we in this? And the thing I kept on hearing over and over and over again on the Sunday talk shows was the president's reluctance to do this, how he was, really toying with this idea for a very, very long time. And where are we on this?
Well, now his critics are saying he waited too long, and right. Had he done this sooner, it would have been more effective. And yet he counters by saying that there really wasn't any, strong single opposition to go in there and assist or, and he ran on a promise to get us out of Iraq back in 2008, and the American people supported that, and he finally had gotten the U.S. out of Iraq. The last thing that he would ever want to do would be commit even air force over Iraq, and certainly, you know, as the term goes, he's extraordinarily reluctant, and so are Americans, to have any boots on the ground. But will airstrikes, strategic airstrikes like this, helping the Kurds in this particular case, be enough? You know, it's just going to become a big political issue in the midterm elections. It's really he's getting hit from both sides, no matter what he does here.
Yeah,
Rich.
I think that look, the seeds of this were sown, you know, in 2009 with the U.S. pullout of Iraq. You had to know that there would be a power vacuum and that somebody was going to leap into it. I can't imagine this as a totally unanticipated result. You know, whether or not you agreed with his decision to pull out, this is, you know, it's certainly a cause and effect. And so I don't know why he's surprised by this, if he is. And if the decision was made to have no U.S. military presence in that area, then you have to take, and you leave that door open, you have to take whatever comes through that door. I agree with Mike, certainly, in that this does seem political, and it seems like, you know, just a couple of months before some highly contested elections, you see him taking some strong military type action, that'll, you know, maybe mollify some of his critics and it just kind of stem this very scary idea of the Islamic State just kind of taking these huge swaths of land, which clearly they're not going to give up.
So to your point, Rich, because I think it's a good one, is that as all of your points are, by the way, I just don't want to exclude your other points.
It's a low percentage,
but I think that this whole idea of when. Going back to George W. Bush as president, and one of the critics of President Bush and of the action in Iraq was that, okay, well, how do you get out of it? And how do you get out of it? And how do you clean up the mess that was started then? Mm-hmm. So and that then when the president made the call to say, okay, we're going to get out of Iraq, and then people kept on still saying, well, okay, but how do you rectify the problems that have been caused? How do you see this going through without there being future issues? So now we see those future issues, and you said this, and I guess I just want to clarify it a little bit as to, you know, how much of this really was a surprise. We saw this coming, and you have to think that at some point there was a, hopefully, some sort of expectation/plan into how to deal with that.
I don't see anything that demonstrates that, though.
Well, I agree.
That there was a plan. Mike,
it certainly looks like they were hoping it would turn out better. And now that it has, even civilians massive amounts of civilians have been killed and more could be, now it's a humanitarian effort. It's we're stepping in. The term that you've heard over the weekend was that it was going to turn into genocide, and you know, the U.S. had to step in. And
right.
In fact, when they stepped in, it also helped the Kurds. But you know, clearly they waited as long as they felt that they could.
Well, not only, and plus, you know, unfortunately, genocide has never really been a criteria for U.S. action, right? I mean, and maybe under any administration.
Well, in Bosnia, I mean,
in Bosnia,
part of a,
yes,
a,
okay.
you know, a international
but
effort.
I mean, the numbers in Syria, right, are you know, seem, as far as I can tell, over the entire Syrian conflict over the past few years, dwarf these numbers. And then, you know, what's going on in, you know, the Sudan and, you know, the African
right,
nations,
right?
So
clearly, all over the globe, there's, yeah. Right, and we haven't stepped in, but.
So you kind of wonder, why then, you know, and I.
Well, I think we know the answer to that, right?
You had to do something. It had to do something political.
And it helps justify it politically. Right. And in fact, what became a humanitarian effort to.
And there's also oil.
Right. Oil. Strategic resources in these Middle Eastern countries that are at stake.
But we've already made that decision, right? We're not going to control that. We're going to step out and somebody else. The other thing, folks on my side of the aisle, my side of the divide, point back to, this kind of watershed decision, the Syrian decision with the chemical weapons, or the Syrian kind of non-decision, when the red line was crossed, yes. and then suddenly at the brink of what seemed to be U.S. action that we thought was going to look a lot like this, mm-hmm. right? There was kind of a pullback. Well, no, now we're going to go back to Congress, and then. Assad, still standing tall, and then Putin became a player, and it almost seems, without politicking about it, it almost seems like other groups saw that non-action and, leapt into the void. Certainly Putin at some point leapt into that void.
Right? That certainly is the rhetoric. I mean, the John McCain's, the neocons, the, Dick Cheney's are saying we missed opportunities to, we missed opportunities to, especially right around the time that they had agreed to get rid of chemical weapons. Syria had, responded to the international community and was going to give up the weapons, which they have.
Right.
Well, at least some of them. You never know. But the, it becomes, I guess, just played out that, we're weak. If Ronald Reagan were there, he would have done this. You hear a lot of that kind of stuff. And we missed the opportunity to be strong. But I think Obama was reading the sentiment of the U.S. And even though the polls show that he's unpopular and they don't give him high marks for his foreign policy, the same surveys show that people do not want to get involved in another protracted war. And this is a complication.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will discuss this and other issues. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from the Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake. Local organic grass-fed beef burgers, Milwaukee hot dogs, bison, and fish fry. Now open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. PiratesLakesideGrill.com. And Thomas Cole National Historic Site, Catskill, in New York's Hudson Valley, presenting their new exhibition, Master, Mentor, Master, Thomas Cole and Frederick Church. Open Wednesday through Sunday, thomascole.org.
We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll read a few of them and probably wrap up this part of the conversation before the news break and then get into other issues on the other side. Jim writes, she's back, Hillary the Hawk, or Chicken Hawk, as many of my fellow veterans she criticized President Obama for not getting more involved militarily in Syria, and I suspect she will call for the same in Iraq. She unapologetically accept buried deep in her book, supported the Iraq War. The main reason many of my fellow veterans and I supported Obama and not Clinton in 2008 was her Iraq vote, and this convinces me not to support her in 2016. And she did come out over the weekend somewhat critical of the president's actions, which was interesting, which I think is what Jim is referring to. Also, George writes, the fact is that we caused the initial problem in Iraq by starting a war there based on lies and therefore responsible for helping the people in the country we broke. You break it, you bought it. And also, we got this from... oh, actually, I already read that. So there we go. We welcome your letter, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And
Joe, did you see this quote? I thought I saw a quote, I want to say from The Nation, and it's fairly recent, where Obama said in the last couple of days, listen, you know, it wasn't my idea for us to leave Iraq, that because Maliki we were ready to stay, but they wouldn't sign
some kind of an agreement.
The agreement that says we wouldn't prosecute people and be able to maintain troops. So it came out. You know, that wasn't my decision. You know, that was kind of, you know, his decision to do that.
He refused to take responsibility for the lack of U.S. troops in Iraq, saying that American soldiers had to pull out due to political pressure from Iraqi leaders.
Now, that just. Again, that sounds a tad disingenuous, no?
Well, I mean, it was, we were pushed out. Maliki was trying to get us out. We weren't really crazy about Maliki. Now it looks like finally they're having a change at the top, and there's going to be new leadership and perhaps a more, you know, it's very, very late after the fact, but perhaps a more receptive government to having many factions represented. And that's the problem with Maliki. You know, he was very harsh,
right.
and that kind of gave an open to his opponents, you know, in Iraq. But, you know, I do recall that. I mean, you know, even at the point where we broke it, now we've got to, you know, own it, comments from back in 2004 or 2003 when we went into Iraq, you know, there were people predicting that we'd have like a permanent presence there. There'd be a base in Iraq,
right.
And that would stabilize the Middle East. And that just, it didn't happen. And we were pretty much forced out, you know.
Well, I thought Cheney and those folks said that would be the plan. That, you know, we
were
going to be
idea.
There. And of course, there was much, you know, hue and cry.
A lot happened since then.
Yeah, right. But I just go back and say I think we could have stayed if we wanted to, right?
You think so? Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we could have brought more pressure. But if the president didn't want to, you know, he shouldn't make any bones about that. You're right. You know, he ran on that. And, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, now you do have Hillary Clinton, you know, mounting a presidential campaign, likely, you know, kind of distancing herself from the president and criticizing his failure to get involved in Syria. So, you know, everyone seems to be his critic today.
We welcome your criticism of us or the president or anyone else. Roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We are going to hear the latest from NPR News, and then we will be back with more conversation. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. Rich Honan, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we will be back after this short break on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Joining me on the panel this morning, Mike Spain, Associate Editor of the Times Union, and also joining us, Rich Honan, who is the partner in charge of the Albany office of Phillips Lytle LLP right here in Albany, New York. Good morning, Rich. Good morning,
morning.
Mike. Thank you very much for being with us. Let me read from some letters. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We got this letter who says, I have read that Iran leaned heavily on Maliki not to allow the U.S. to stay via the status of forces agreement. Had we stayed without an agreement, we would have been occupiers. Ryan says, we could have stayed if we wanted to, quote, think about what you just said. Iraq, I believe this would be you,
that
Mr. Honan. Yes. Iraq is a sovereign country. What is this, 1898? Give me a break. That's flat out imperialism. Don't blame the president because a terrorist group decides to commit terror.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember the amount of leaders that we affirmatively took out under this administration between Mubarak and Gaddafi, and those were sovereign countries too. But right, keep going.
And then Jewel says, Rich, sorry about the Assad responsibility for the Syrian gas attack has not been definitively proven. In fact, substantial evidence to the contrary exists, just as there is still no definitive evidence from the surveillance satellites that MH17 was shot down by Russian allied militias. So circumstantial evidence can be interpreted however the interpreter wishes.
I didn't mean to say that whether or not to take action because of the chemical weapons, but what I was saying was the inaction, I think, was a little bit of a signal to other watchers in that region that the United States was, you know, certainly going to be a little more deliberate, I'll say, about responding. And I think that's the signal, I think, regardless of the merits of chemical weapons and the red line and everything. I think the takeaway for a lot of these groups was just that action is going to be a little bit more deliberate so that you have the ability to kind of, you know, move your agenda along while the United States is deciding what to do.
We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. It's nice having you here, Rich, because now the mail isn't directed only to us. It's good. I like it. Let's talk about the Tony Stewart story. This was a story that dominated headlines late Saturday and all day yesterday, and of course this morning as well. Three-time Cup champion Tony Stewart pulled out of the NASCAR Sprint Cup race in Watkins Glen in New York just 12 hours after he struck and killed sprint driver Kevin Ward Jr., who had climbed from his car during a race in New York. So Tony Stewart is one of the marquee drivers of NASCAR. He was participating in a major race at Watkins Glen on Sunday, was to participate in a major race. And on Saturday, he did what he often does, which is go to these smaller tracks with $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 purses and race against, you know, basically kids who are in the sport, and because he enjoys it, and also it's good for the sport overall. So he goes to this race in Canandaigua, and at about 10:30, there is he and this other driver, Kevin Ward, they bump each other. And this causes Kevin Ward's car to crash over on the side of turn two of the track at Canandaigua. Kevin Ward gets mad. He gets out of the car. The race, because there has now been a crash, the race goes under what they call a yellow flag, which everybody slows down, and the official race is not on anymore. And the guy, he gets out of the car and kind of charges the track to scream at Tony Stewart, who had given him a bump in the turn. One driver misses him, and in a flash second later, Tony Stewart's car, as the first car misses him and veers, Tony Stewart's car is behind that vehicle and to the right, and it seems as though the car fishtailed a bit. And then the rear tire hit Kevin Ward, and then threw him, and he was pronounced dead a short time later. There's a lot of things to talk about in this story, I guess. One of them is that as I mentioned, he waited 12, 13 hours to decide not to be a part of Watkins Glen. There was some criticism over that. I don't know how much of that is is media hype, and how much of it is real, you know, a real story. I don't know that. And also the fact of criminal charges, where there's still the question of criminal charges, and investigation is continuing, whether criminal charges would be filed against Tony Stewart for killing this young man. and you know, who ultimately is to blame in something like this, and then just overall the safety of the sport as a whole. So I guess those are some of the questions too.
Yeah. The Ontario County Sheriff who investigated the you know, the Canandaigua fatality did say that there was no evidence. This was not, there were no charges pending against him, and until they find evidence otherwise, there will be no charges. The unusual, I'm not familiar with dirt track racing that much. I mean, I'm not a fan. I don't go to those races, but some of the stories have said it's not unusual for someone to be angry and get out and kind of poke their finger and point at the one who knocked them off the road, and those kinds of you know, expressions are probably part of the culture, and you know, risky, unbelievably risky,
right.
and not endorsed, but it does you know, just sort of give you a picture of this subculture. And this isn't NASCAR either. This is dirt track racing. And it is interesting that, you know, Tony Stewart, this, you know, world-known NASCAR guy who's won all these accolades, would himself, you know, do that, take his time to do that, promote the sport and promote, you know, give a little local entertainment. It was kind of a thrill, I'm sure, for people in Canandaigua to have Tony Stewart racing their dirt
track.
And it just seems like just a really sad, sad tragedy. On the morning ABC News, they announced right at like 8 o'clock as it went on that Tony Stewart had decided to race at Watkins
Glen. Yeah, I
heard
that too. Right.
And then it turned out that he didn't. And it was probably, you know, people prevailed upon him about how that wouldn't have, it just looked insensitive for him to participate and not be at least affected by what tragedy happened the night before. But I don't know if it's any more. I'll be really surprised if anything else comes of this. I mean, they showed the videotape,
yeah,
and it didn't look like somebody, you know, was trying to do something. But.
No, I think there's a different, and also, I mean, it would be hard to prove to me that other than a tragic accident, which it seems it is, that here is a guy who, I mean, certainly is a competitor. He gets angry. He has a temper. We know this. Okay, this is part of that culture, as you said. But he's also, you can assume, he didn't want to kill anyone, number one. And number two, that you would, you know, run over somebody in front of a, you know, a group full of people is just not like anything would be intentional.
I can't imagine.
In that. So, you know, take that aside and then say, okay, well, here's a guy who's running out in the middle of the track of a car that's going however many miles an hour. Okay, so you're Tony Stewart's attorney, Rich Honan, and you from
this is a hypothetical.
From the time this happens at 10:30 on a Saturday night to early in the morning on Sunday, the advice being what?
Well, Mike's right. The Ontario County Sheriff, you know, almost really made a point to say we're not looking at a criminal investigation, and he also kind of went out of his way to say been fully cooperative. Stewart's been fully cooperative in every way. Like, you got the impression he was trying to say, look, we have to ask our questions, but we're not pointing a finger of guilt. It's interesting, Mike. It seemed like at first I wasn't sure if it was just a long delay in the decision whether or not to race. But you're right. I heard the same thing. Sunday morning you were hearing, yep, we're going to race. And then later, you know, after some delay, you know, they pull out. And I assume that was PR-based. As a lawyer, I could understand. I would not do this, but I could understand a lawyer floating the idea that, hey, maybe by pulling out of the Watkins Glen race, people will see that as
Some admission
of guilt, you know, because, you know, you've seen, look, you know, whenever, you know, like whenever we settle a case and, you know, we're going to pay you $150 billion, but we don't admit any guilt or liability.
We
did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So I wonder, and I don't have any information on this. I wonder if somebody maybe floated that idea. Now, as an attorney, I would have said, no, we're not. First, it wouldn't be an admission. And second, you're going to put yourself so much more under the microscope by even thinking about being in that race. I mean, I think the delay
has to be an emotional impact of having been involved in even an accident that you didn't cause. How could it not affect you 24 hours later and going into a very dangerous situation? It just seemed like a prudent thing to do, even from that perspective.
And Joe, do you have any, I agree with that. And what I don't know, and I don't, I don't know much about dirt track racing either, but
really?
I do that.
Unless it's horses.
Yes.
Right. Different type of dirt.
I
saw Rich over the weekend at a dirt track.
Yeah, that's right. But I do wonder, and I would defer to anybody who knows about this. I know it's not unusual for them to kind of shake their fist at each other, which to me seems as silly as, I mean, here it was tragic, but it's like when football guys get in a fight, you know, with their football players with their helmets on, you know, you just wonder where is that going. But what I don't know, right? You know, what was that plan? Do the other guys respond by kind of buzzing them? I don't know that.
Well,
you know,
I think,
is that part of the kind of macho culture
of that? That's a very interesting
that?
Question.
I don't know that.
Is it a little bit of a dance, almost like in a bullfight, you know?
Exactly.
Matador and the bull, I don't know.
I have no information on this. I'm just asking.
There does seem to be, there are those who watch the sport very closely who say that probably what happened is if he did see him, which is there can
it's
be
unclear,
a very good
right.
case that he did not see him because A, the suit is black, the track is dark, it's not well lit, it's not a NASCAR facility, so it does not
low budget.
It is a low budget. It's a low budget,
and also it's not fully anticipated that people are going to be walking out on the
racetrack. Well, I mean, you know, I think it is often. I mean, I think that's part
right.
of it. But those who watch the sport say yes, it is not uncommon, as Mike said, it's not uncommon for a driver to get out. And what he may have been trying to do, what Stewart may have been trying to do, is to as he was coming out, just give him a little bit of a fishtail so some dirt flies on him, and then he keeps on going. And obviously, that tragically goes wrong. So you know, I don't. You know, I think there's a case to be made for that as well. But again,
that would change the analysis, right?
But I don't think it's not intentional. It's different.
But they were looking for other videos from other angles, and they were looking for photos that people may have taken. And you know, certainly law enforcement has to consider whether he engaged in any deliberately reckless behavior that contributed to this and for which he could be charged with something.
It's unfair to even bring that up, though, right?
Unfair. Well, I don't know that anything's unfair at this point of putting it out there, you know, and analyzing it. But I do think that, you know, I mentioned this at the beginning about some of the media hype over, you know, over analyzing the fact of the delay. I think, to Mike's point, I think it's got to be a very emotional thing. I have an idea that the camp had probably this guy when the Tony Stewart went out in a complete fog and had to get himself together. And before anybody could really talk to him, they were just saying, okay, business as usual, until it wasn't.
Right, until
said, okay, I'm not doing this. And I think there are a lot of different people who responded on the team and said different things. And meanwhile,
I think a lot of people would have regarded it as disrespectful for him to participate the next day.
I don't have any feeling that perhaps he really wanted to in the first place.
Yeah.
I think it was just took that time to kind of get around to
it. A lot of people probably were coming to Watkins Glen to see Tony Stewart too. You know, and there was pressure there from somebody.
Right. So it's but it's a sad story, and
it's
it is certainly a tragedy, and it's something that I'm sure will be discussed and analyzed in the days and weeks to come. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up. We'll talk about other stories making news. We welcome your comments as always. roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Baba Louie's Pizza, Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York. Natural wood-fired pizzas, salads, vegan soups, sandwiches, pasta dishes, and gluten-free options. BabaLouisPizza.com. The Olana Partnership, presenting Music from the High Peaks to Olana's Orchard, an evening of chamber music, Friday, August 15th, 6 p.m., olana.org. And Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, period antiques, fine arts, and collections. MarkLawson.com.
welcome you back to our roundtable panel this morning, and we thank you for being with us. We always welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We got a letter from Medin who says, there are many analyses, but most people who follow Tony Stewart say that he is well known as a hothead. A hothead reacts emotionally. There was another accident in maybe 2013 in which he was found likely responsible, very serious accident. He seems to have been trying to send this guy a message. It was not a fishtail accident. These guys know how to maneuver their cars, and there was a caution flag that Stewart was aware of. Never mind the black. Don't begin to think this through as it was an accident before you study it all and his record. I know nothing about NASCAR. I'm not out to get anyone or excuse anyone. Well,
he certainly reached a conclusion that goes after somebody.
Yes, I think so.
The facts are not in yet.
But I think it goes back to that original point, which is it's hard to believe, and I'm not making excuses for anyone, mm-hmm. nor am I excusing anyone, but it is hard to believe that a man at the top of his profession would, even in a moment of anger or as a hothead, would intentionally take the life of another human being on a racetrack. That seems to be difficult for me to believe. But that's all I was saying. So, anyway, we go off to another story, and it's another horrible story, isn't it?
Well, this one, nobody was injured.
Okay,
yes.
So that one's
so
good.
It was a tragedy averted, and you're talking about Schenectady, where a house blew up yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Now that seems bad.
Yeah, it does. It was in the Hamilton Hill neighborhood of Schenectady on Page Street. 310 Page Street. It was reduced to rubble a little after 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon with a big explosion. Luckily, the house was not occupied, although police were double-checking to make sure there were no people in the rubble before they cleared it away, and there were not. But the neighbors said the house, which has been abandoned for about a year, did have some people going in and out of it recently, so there was that concern. But what happened was neighbors in the last few days had reported to National Grid, that's the company, the utility that controls the gas and the electric to that area, that they smelled gas. There's some question about whether National Grid visited the site or didn't visit the site. A spokesperson for National Grid said it didn't, that they did not, and they did not get those reports, but some people are disputing that and say they saw them on site the day before, but that'll be played out. So the house is gone. The next-door neighbor, who everybody quoted, was on all the TV, and he was quoted in the Times Union and in other newspapers. His name is Tom Batcher, was alone in the house. His kids were off with friends playing, and they weren't in the neighborhood, but ordinarily they might have been outside, and that would have been a tragedy. So as much as it's a stunning event, it did turn out that nobody was injured, and that's a good thing. But it does make you wonder, if you smell gas in your neighborhood and you report it. I mean, it's a good idea to report it, you know.
Yeah. Seems like a good rule of thumb, doesn't it?
You know, and I live in Schenectady also, not in that neighborhood, but a few miles away. And National Grid has been coming through for the last 3 months replacing the gas lines because they were put in 1907. And they felt that they probably ought to replace them. So, you know, rebuilding old infrastructure. This is what this story is really about. Right. Need to rebuild old infrastructure, Joe. But I'm sure we'll hear more about it. But the good news is nobody was hurt. And this was a building that was abandoned, and it's been demolished and cleared away.
You would think, but you say it was unoccupied, right?
So
you would
there were no residents in there, but there was always the possibility that people were squatters in there. You know,
you would assume the utilities would have been off. You'd assume,
evidently some gas got in there.
You know, I started my legal career as an intern at Con Ed, you know, the New York City kind of version of National Grid, and it just amazed me the age and extent of that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, just
You remember San Bruno, California, south of San Francisco, a few years ago, where a fairly affluent neighborhood had like five houses, you know, were destroyed in a huge firebomb explosion. So, you know, making sure the infrastructure is sound is really important.
And also just the serendipitousness, right? this becomes kind of a, you know, not a funny, but, you know, an interesting story. And you're right. If, you know, kids in a yard, somebody driving by, and it becomes just you know, a tragic story. Just like the Stewart story, you know, he misses the guy and, you know, he gets dirt on him and it turns into a, you know, very different story.
Right. It's just chance. And this was a fortunate outcome, and there'll be more, obviously, and I'm sure people will be pointing fingers at who should have come and done something.
I'm sure
there's
nothing yet directly linking it to the Obama administration.
I'm sure you'll find something.
You know, the failed efforts of the Obama administration.
All right. So we'll see. Mike, you'll be back tomorrow. Yep. Rich, when are you back?
I think tomorrow.
You're back tomorrow. Excellent.
Unless Mike sends me the same way that Alan sent
me. And Blair Horner will join us tomorrow. So we look forward to that. Thank you all very much. We'll be back. You can keep on writing letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. The roundtable continues after this break.